Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Yeah, we've got sunshine. Yesterday it snowed the entire time during our show, which was pretty cool to sit here and look out and see snow in Nashville on the last day of November. Not too often we ever see that. Not today, though. Still remnants on the ground. We always enjoy our conversations with our next guest. Ian Eagle will be in the booth on the call of the matchup of 2-8-3 teams, the Browns and the Titans, in Nashville at Nissan Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Ian, how you doing?
You know, it's crazy, guys. One of the coldest games that I ever worked was in Nashville, and it was snowing, and somebody ripped Eddie George's name off his jersey, and I was not prepared for the weather. That's what I recall about the game, that I went in, oh, it's Nashville. I'm good. I got crushed.
Okay, wait a minute. Now you've piqued our interest. We've been covering the team since they've been in Nashville. So what year are we talking about? Do you remember?
If you can find the highlight, someone literally ripped his name off the jersey. And I believe that was a game that I could not feel my extremities.
Wow, now you've really piqued my curiosity. I don't remember.
They're all blending together. It's been 23 years at CBS, but I do have one very vivid memory of freezing my butt off in Nashville unexpectedly.
Wow. Well, it's going to be a cold week. I don't think it's going to fit that category by the time we get to Sunday. I think you're going to be all right. And obviously it won't be Eddie George, but maybe somebody will try to do that to Derrick Henry, type running backs. When you see Derrick Henry and what he's doing and following up last year's campaign, it's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm blown away, guys. And every time you think you've seen everything that he's got, all the stiff arms, the barreling through a wave of tacklers, showing off his dexterity, showing off his speed and agility, he shows you something else. That, to me, from a play-by-play match perspective, that's next level. When you go into a game knowing that you better have all of your concentration and attention poured into every play that he touches the ball, because something really special and unique may happen. And that's my feeling on TV games I've done, on radio games that I've done. I feel like now, just for me on a personal level, I've had easily 10 major highlights with him, whether it be running the football, throwing the ball in the playoff game last year against Baltimore, long runs, crushing, stiff arms, you name it, he's done it. And he just does it with the same kind of approach. Like, nothing seems to ever rattle this guy. He took a hard hit last week, and that's a rarity. You don't see it that often.
Yeah.
Even that, went to the sideline, caught his breath, came back, and just gained more yards.
That's a good point. I admitted yesterday on the show, I feel watching Derrick Henry run the football now a lot like Lane Kiffin on the college football side of things. We've all seen the shots of Lane Kiffin with his arms raised up in the air, or even throwing the playbook up in the air before the pass is even made because he knows it's a touchdown. How rare is it that you can see at the NFL level, there's just times when I raise my hands up in the air, when he gets the ball, he's taking like two steps, and I'm like, I see where everybody is around him, and I'm going, that thing's going to the house. It's hard to say that in the NFL.
It is, and you know, it's funny. When you do this kind of work year in and year out, you try to come up with creative ways to tell stories, and oftentimes guys on our crew that do a terrific job, they locate and discover high school footage of players. And more often than not, when you play the high school footage back, you obviously know that they were just at a different level. These guys couldn't cover these players at that time, whether it's a quarterback that was running around, a running back that was plowing through the competition, and there's a discernible difference in the highlights because the speed, the size, it all catches up to them. When we do that with Derrick Henry, to me, it's not much of a difference. You look at his high school footage, you're like, okay, yeah, all right, what's he going to do at Alabama? You go, oh, he just did that all over again, and he won the Heisman Trophy. Well, what's he going to do in the pros? Oh, he's doing that again, and it's the NFL, and it doesn't look that different than what the guy was doing in Yulee, Florida. And that's saying a whole lot. I don't think there are any players that you could say that about. Sometimes you get these physical forces, and he's just one of them. I don't know if we're going to get another one that's going to be just like him. He might be so unique in his skill set and his size that they broke the mold.
We had Joe Thomas on earlier in the show, longtime Browns offensive lineman, future Hall of Famer. And we were just talking about the Titans. You know, I asked him, they're on their third left tackle this season. David Quisenberry filled in nicely. Now he's going to have his hands full with Myles Garrett, who's coming back on Sunday. But you've seen this doing these games. I've got to ask you, because we joke constantly on this show. We live here in Nashville. We've been covering this team since they've been here. You know, it's our job to cover this team, and every week we watch them and go, who is that guy? You know, I mean, it's like Breon Borders. Here's Tyrre Tart. It's like, who are these guys? I feel like we're doing another episode of the movie Major League. So what's it like, and we're covering the team, what's it like for a national guy to be doing these rosters that are constantly changing and evolving?
Yeah, when they put Serrano in the game, let me know. That's when I'm going to have to make some serious adjustments to my charts. You make a great point, and I talked to our producer earlier today. We have a Tuesday morning conversation before our game each week, and we go through storylines, we go through potential narratives that might live by the time you get there to Sunday, and sometimes they don't because other things pop up. But one thing we discussed, everybody gets caught up in the stars, and rightfully so, because there are plenty of them. This offense is stacked. We went through it last week in our open, and we revisited it during the Indianapolis game, the fact that you have Tannehill, Henry, Brown, Davis, Jonnu Smith. They've got every position covered on offense. But sometimes when you dig a little deeper, you recognize that it really does require all 53, or in the case of the Titans and all the other teams because of COVID, sometimes 60, 63, 70 players over the course of a year to contribute. So the fact that Quisenberry has stepped in and they haven't missed a beat, the Lawan injury for most teams, I'm not saying you're done, but you're going to suffer. You lose a stud left tackle. They put in Sombrilo. He does the job. They lose Sombrilo, and now Quisenberry was ready to go. Breon Borders, look, I'm going to be the first to admit it. I've been doing this league for a long time. He was not on my radar. When I had to add him to my chart, I had to go and do some more research, and it's a tremendous story. And he's making a name for himself based on an opportunity. You know, I would toss David Long Jr. into the mix as well, a sixth-round pick last year, showed some flashes, was obviously on the COVID list, comes back this past week with an opportunity for more playing time, and makes good on it. Will Compton ends up playing a lot of the snaps. David Long gets nearly half, if not more. I got to look at the numbers. And that just shows you that this team was fully prepared for what this season was going to be. You had to be flexible, you had to be fluid, and give a lot of credit to John Robinson for being ready and putting Mike Vrabel and his coaching staff in a position to succeed because of their depth.
We're talking to Ian Eagle, one of the best in the business, CBS Sports. And Ian, another person we've had many conversations with is Richard Deitch, now with The Athletic. And I've seen him chronicle you and a lot of the very busy announcers in different sports and the travel that you guys go through routinely. So I'm just curious what that's been like for you this year under the circumstances where we know you got to be really careful when you're doing this, and knock on wood, you know, you've been able to execute flawlessly so far. What kind of challenge has that been?
Yeah, it's been odd, guys, more than anything else. So the routine that you've developed over time, that's thrown out the window, and you have to come up with a new routine. So what has really been missing in this equation, and it's been missing from everybody's life, not just sportscasters, but the interaction, you're not meeting with your group. We have not had one in-person production meeting this season. You're clearly not meeting with the teams in person. You're doing it all virtually, so you got to cut through some of that and find some commonality on Zoom to feel like you're getting some stories that will resonate. And the isolation part has been very odd. You get to a city, you test for COVID, you stay in your room until you get the result back, which is usually about 24 hours later. And you're trying to follow all the rules and regulations. You don't want to be the problem at your network. And you know that sometimes it's out of your control. You're getting on an airplane. That has been very different than the 20-plus years of travel that I've done. In some ways, it's been easier. These airports have been basically empty. So getting through security, all the things that you would always build in, it's no longer a huge problem. And here's the other strange part. People have been more respectful in a way, more respectful of space, more respectful of how you line up to board a plane. We all know the feeling when the gate agent would make an announcement and everybody would get up at the same time. Right. Like, all right, let's go. But whoa, what about zones? Like, everybody now, they follow the rules. I shouldn't say everybody. Most people follow the rules, and they got up when they're instructed to do so. So it's been a very different experience, but I think, like everybody, you are just happy that the games are happening and that some form of normality is taking place on a weekly basis. But to compare what it normally is at the event, you can't. Without the stimuli of 70,000 fans and the fanfare and the buildup, it's very different. These are games, and they used to be events, and there's a clear distinction between the two. We're covering the games, and that's been terrific, but you're not feeling the same emotions that you feel during a normal season. You just can't.
What do you guys talk about in your production meetings on how you're going to present? Because you have to match. I would imagine your call isn't very different without the fans, but the camera shots and what you might emphasize when you're panning away, and you have to match that up with your call. What are those meetings like when you're trying to focus on, you know, how do you bring the game to the audience even though the atmosphere and the environment is not the same?
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of inside baseball from the play-by-play man's perspective, and this happened to me the first game of the year. I had Cleveland-Baltimore in Baltimore, and the way that things are set up at M&T Bank Stadium, the booth is right in the middle of the action. You're at the top of the first level. So when there are fans in there, they are fully engaged. You could reach out and touch them, and for a number of years, to be perfectly honest with you guys, there was a stretch where fans would turn around. They thought I was the replay official. Like, they would turn in the middle of the game, like, is that good? No good? I'm like, I'm not the replay guy. And then after a while, I just bought in. And I was like, yeah, it's good. You're fine. It'll be good. So that's how close we were to the action. So you get there week one. There are no fans. It's very eerie. And the game starts, and I'm working with a new partner, Charles Davis. It's the first game we're doing, and I'm trying to figure out how the dynamic is going to be and the back and forth. And I'm giving him a lot of eye contact because it's our first game. I want to validate what he's saying. I'm nodding. I'm agreeing. I'm tagging. And meanwhile, Lamar Jackson has an option run, and I catch it a little late. So I see it on the pitch to Ingram, and Ingram loses the ball but jumps on top of it, and I'm still good with the call. But then they show the replay, and within Lamar Jackson's run, he has two beautiful moves, dazzling moves. that I did not see on the live look because I was looking at my partner. In a normal setting, the crowd is your guide. You'll get an ooh and an ah, and in that moment you'll know, oh, wait, something special just happened. I've got to adjust my voice. I've got to shift gears. And it's a cue that no longer exists. That's just not part of it. So I was taught a very valuable lesson in the first quarter of the first game that I did this year. You can't rely on certain aspects of the broadcast that you used to be able to lean on. And our production meetings, clearly, we're still talking about the same things that we would normally talk about. But you're right. There are other conversations that take place, probably more producer-director-based, on how to keep things tight and how to present the game in a way that makes people comfortable. That's the goal. And it's a slippery slope, because you do want to be honest and you do want to tell the story, but you also want to make fans feel good about the presentation, about what they're seeing, and the fact that they're dedicating 3 hours of their weekend to this game.
Ian Eagle is with us, the NFL on CBS. He'll be on the call for the Titans and the Browns coming up this Sunday. And as you mentioned earlier, Ian, that you talk to the coaches, and as usually it's in person. That's how it was in the olden days. Hopefully we get back to that at some point soon. It's not just Zoom. But I bring this up because yesterday we aired Mike Vrabel's press conference, and if you listen to the press conference, you would have thought they lost 45-3 after the victory over the Colts. Some coaches are like that, and as you know, in dealing with the different personalities, they handle losses differently, they handle wins differently. There's a message that they want to send to their team, and they do it whenever they crack a mic. How have you seen the coaches and how they deliver their messages change over the years since you've been doing this as a play-by-play man?
Huh, yeah, it's a great question. You know, with Mike in particular, he's a no-nonsense guy. I know you're familiar with that, and I watch the press conferences. I see how he handles the local media and the back and forth, and there's no doubt he doesn't suffer fools. If you ask a foolish question, he's not going to bail you out. If you ask a good question, odds are he's going to give you a good answer. And what I've noticed in our sit-downs, it's not personal with him. It truly is, ask something of value, I'll give you something of value back. There are other coaches that no matter what you ask, they're going to spin it the way that they want to spin it, and they're just going to give you the rhetoric that they're looking to get through the session with. Mike isn't that way. Mike is very specific, and if you ask a specific question, you will get an answer. If you're beating around the bush, if you're doing generalities, if you're asking him to basically fill in the gaps, that's not his MO. And I respect that. You know, you figure out with each coach how they like things and how they do it. What I've seen, you know, the evolution of this, they're doing so much more, and this goes the same for players. They're doing so much more during the week than they used to. The fact that in-house productions and team websites and team beat reporters are now part of this equation means that players and coaches are being pulled in so many different directions over the course of the week. I think back to when I started in 1998 with CBS, you would get a coach and a lot of the stuff was really fresh. It hadn't been covered. And now you've got to find a different angle. If you're asking the same old questions, if you're reviewing last week's game when you sit down with a coach on Friday or Saturday, you're wasting time and you're wasting your own time. So you've just got to be smarter with the topics, and the flow of conversation is a little different. But I do think players and coaches, they just do so much now during the week, and you get them at a time later in the week where they've answered all the questions. So you better bring something a little different to the table.
So obviously being here in Nashville, we've seen the growth of the John Robinson, the Mike Vrabel era, and there are a ton of similarities that, you know, the Patriot way. I mean, that's always brought up because of the cloth that they are cut from. From your point of view, as someone that has done quite a few of these games in the last few years with those guys, have you seen the Titans maybe evolve into a Titan way with some ties to the Patriots, with some of the Belichickian type things that maybe he had that they've been able to pull away? But have you seen it change to become more of their own than just New England 2.0?
Yeah, I think, simply put, anyone that came from New England and moved on to a head coaching job, the assumption was they were going to bring some of Belichick with them. Josh McDaniels when he got to Denver, Eric Mangini when he got the Jet job, what we saw in Detroit with Matt Patricia, Flores in Miami. But the ones that have been really successful, Mike Vrabel, who was never a coach in New England, so he played there, but I think sometimes it becomes a misnomer where people just assume that it's coursing through his veins. Mike Vrabel had a lot of different experiences beyond just New England, with Pittsburgh, with Kansas City, with Ohio State, with Houston, and I see him as separate. I do think he's taken some of what he learned as a player under Belichick, but to me, he brings his own identity to the mix and something that was fostered over a 14-year playing career, and someone who is a really smart football guy. But I don't think Mike, and I don't know this for certain, and I'm not sure that anyone has really delved into it with him, I don't think Mike would tell you that it's all him. He really does trust his people. And there's a lot of trust in Arthur Smith, and there's a lot of trust in Shane Bowen and Craig Aukerman and people on that staff that do a lot of quality work to put him in a position to make good decisions when it comes to going for two or going for it on fourth down. So I see it as very collaborative, and that's not to say Bill Belichick doesn't listen to his people, but I do think with Bill, oftentimes there's a lot going on in his brain that will transpire over the course of the game. And with Mike, who's a really sharp football guy and sees all of the different elements of the game and does play it like a chessboard, but it feels like it's more collaborative, and that's based on him and who he is and what he's accomplished and having confidence in his own resume and how he got here. So I get it. I get the comparisons, and it's natural, but I really think there's more to it with Vrabel. And, you know, I don't know John Robinson, but I do respect how he's built this team and the fact that they've taken some flyers on some guys, and it's paid off. You know, this idea with Ryan Tannehill, it's amazing. I just think about his time in Miami and think about how many times I met with him through the years, and you could tell that he was trying to break through. He was certainly trying to do all the things the right way, and for whatever reason, he was held back a little bit, and it just never quite connected. And to see everything click for him the way that it has in Nashville, it's pretty amazing, and it's a testament to him and his hard work and how he's handled his business.
I can tell you without a doubt that the whole interview, I have been trying to rack my brain and figure out the Eddie George game, the cold game. There haven't been very many really, really cold
games
here.
I did not imagine this. I'm telling you it happened.
I'm going to figure this out, Ian. I'm just telling you. I don't know how long it's going to take me, but I'm going to figure out that game because right now it's not coming to me.
Well,
hey,
we know it has to be between 99 and 03, right?
Correct.
03 was his last year as a Titan. So,
and you said it was in Nashville?
Titan.
Yeah,
right.
it wasn't
a Tennessee Oilers game.
Now I'm questioning whether or not that happened on the road, and he had his jersey ripped up on the road, and maybe I'm conflating it with a different game that I did in Nashville that was so ridiculously cold. But my belief is that it did happen the same day. I believe I was working with Solomon Wilcox at the time, so I started working with Solomon in 01. So now we're going to narrow it down. Between
01 to 03.
Okay. Somewhere in that range. I don't think it was his last year because he was still cooking, I believe, at the time. It was still, and he had a huge game, if I remember correctly. And, man, could it possibly have been against Cleveland? I don't know. That's pushing it. I've run out of bandwidth in my brain.
I think we're all getting there, Ian. Every day we lose a little bit of bandwidth.
I'm telling you, I could have recited like every episode of The Love Boat. I can't remember three now offhand.
There's always so much space in there.
No doubt. Hey, we always enjoy the visits. Keep up the good work in the booth. We'll be certainly watching on Sunday, and we'll talk to you here soon.
All right, guys. Fun conversation. Really fun calling this team. More than anything else, it's been a ball watching them develop. So this should be a good one. Hopefully Cleveland can come in and hold up their end of the bargain, and we'll have an entertaining, competitive game.
Well, we're enjoying it. The fans are enjoying it. As we talked about a lot on the show after the press conference that you alluded to, we're not sure the head coach enjoys it because we don't know from week to week if they're 8-3 or 3-8. Just not sure.
I think deep down he is, but we alluded to it on the broadcast last week that the way things were going in the fourth quarter, that Mike was going to be able to take something out of it that he could rip into his team about, and that might be part of the motivation as well. And I see it. Big picture, he's looking to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we would certainly welcome that in this market. Ian, thanks for the visit. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Great talking to you guys.
All right, that is Ian Eagle. He does a fantastic job in the booth. He'll be on the call on CBS, as you just heard, 23 years now with CBS, NFL on CBS, and his partner, Charles Davis. And so... Yeah. Really good to catch up with him. We'll come back. A lot to discuss on the other side as we get a little bit closer to that game, Titans and Browns at Nissan Stadium. We will do that on the other side. But first, I want to talk to you about my friends at Cool Springs MD. Yeah, they're my friends because I've been going there for years, and they've been taking care of me for years, just like a lot of you here in Middle Tennessee. They've been in this market since 2007, and Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board-certified physician over there. He's certainly been taking care of a lot of people, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff would love to improve your quality of life, just like mine. As we all get older, things start happening. Things start breaking down, and they house a lot of things under one roof. For example, if you haven't been feeling yourself, maybe you've been feeling off or been having mood swings or haven't had any energy, any drive, go in there and talk to them about hormone replacement therapy. It is natural as we get older that those levels dip, and sometimes they can dip just way too low, and they have the ability to change that, fix that, and boy, do you see a difference when that happens. So go in there. If that's been going on with you, talk to them about that. They can help you. Face and body rejuvenation is something, as we get older, that they can talk to you about. Weight loss management, hello. That's always important, but especially in this calendar year, they've got programs and people that can get you headed in the right direction. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation with these folks, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291 is how you can get in touch with them. Or you can always learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com, SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.